fifth person. That's what I did. Yeah, you were not paying attention. You added to the word.
It would be bad for the writers.
All right. Was I supposed to be introduced? No introduction? Okay, I'm Mike. So I'm so glad y'all are still doing the gospel meeting. Maybe these won't work everywhere, but out in the country they do. My wife grew up in a congregation like this, and I was asked while I was in college to go out and work with this church, and that's where I met her. And it was really phenomenal. The membership was about 125, and the youth group had 40 teenagers in it, which is phenomenal. It was just, it changed my life. Of course, that's where I met her, and this reminds me of that. You know, and I know some, I'm not judging all speakers, I know some are kind of on the mega church kick, and they're not gonna, you know, they're gonna preach unless there's a huge crowd. In fact, back when I was younger, a young speaker had a life, before I was reduced to the shell of man you see before you, and being a youth minister for so long, I had a friend of mine. We were invited to speak at these youth, we call them youth rallies in the early, remember that? Now I guess they're conferences and forums, and they got fancy names, but we just call them youth rallies. And we were invited to a lot of them, and I remember one time he said, you know, I almost feel like it's not worth going to speak if there's not at least, you know, 250, 300 teenagers there. And I said, well, that's interesting. Jesus spent most of his time talking to 12. And he went, I need to repent, don't I? I said, yes, you do. Because people do get caught in the numbers. I know we'd rather see 20 baptized than two, but I've never been one to worry about how many were there. Because we got a pretty packed house tonight, but if only five had come, I'd still be, I'm going to give the same message. And also, any of you men in the back, we haven't counted yet, because I'm going to need that later in the lesson. We have just a general kind of close. What we got?
124.
100?
24.
So, James, were you? I need 10% of that in a few minutes, okay? So, we'll calculate that in a second. Well, okay, another depressing lesson tonight. This one's on depression. I wish I didn't have this lesson, just like I wish I didn't have last night's lesson. But we can't control that. All we can do is take the hand that's dealt us. I don't get it sometimes. My grandson, shortly after Lisa died, I think the day of the funeral, he said, he was seven at the time. He said, Pop, when we get to heaven, I'm going to ask God, why does ALS happen? And I said, honey, I am too. You know, we might not. We might not. We might get there. I have a feeling when Lisa went to be with God, the ALS didn't bother. And it was probably like a bump in the road. Now, it's not to me. I'm still grinding through the gravel. But, you know, we're all going to be in that situation one day. This is one of my favorite buildings, church buildings I've ever been in. And so I'm going to be doing a personal tour of it later. My wife and I have always liked historic buildings, especially church buildings. And you think about everybody that was in attendance the first time, they're gone. It's kind of neat for me to think about. My wife has probably talked to all of them. Maybe she said, my husband's preaching where you used to go. I like to think about it like that. But we're all going to go. And I'm really ticked that she got 54 years and that's it. But some of you have already shared with me from last night stories of your loved ones that didn't make it that long. So, grateful for some of you sharing those stories with me, because it reminds me that I'm not in the worst shape of anybody. I haven't gone through the worst situation of anybody. Lisa could have, we could have had ALS in a third world country. Right after the typhoon hits, you know. It could be worse. You know, and she had a great life living in the USA. She wasn't a Tennessee fan like me. As y'all see there, we had a split home, which is very frustrating. But we were both Americans, so that helped. Both Christians. But anyway, this depression deal. Some of you might think this is not needed. Maybe some of you thought depression is of the devil. Maybe some of you think that depression is just a state of mind that you can control and snap out of it. If you've got enough faith, or if you think positive thoughts, or if you get busy and don't feel sorry for yourself. And I'm going to prove to you tonight, through not only firsthand knowledge, firsthand experience, but through the scientific data on the brain, that that's not the case. So if you've been that way, glad you're here. Talked to a lot of people that have experienced this in their family and friends. Good Christian people don't know how to handle it, and they say the wrong thing. So, in some form, maybe not as bad as I had it, because I'm going to show you and demonstrate in a minute how bad it was for me. 20% of this congregation will in some way, maybe it won't be severe, maybe it will be mild, maybe you've already gone through a mild. There's a possibility that some of you have been in depression and don't know it because you think that's how everybody feels all the time and you've grown up that way. I've talked a lot like that. James, what is 20% of, what's our number?
124.
124? How many is that? 25 people. That's a big chunk of people in here. If this group is average, that's the deal. That's a lot of people in our lives. Now, since James has not introduced me tonight, I want to just introduce myself and do a quick overview of my life that will take 40 seconds. I was born a beautiful child in Nashville, and I lived what I call the all-American Christian life. I had a great upbringing. I had a lot of fun. Not that I did not have the typical insecurities of going to school. And I feel sorry for our kids today. All of our kids hear about school shootings. The worst we thought we could get beat up if we stepped in front of a bullet. So I was kind of the average kid, wasn't real big, athletic, so I steered clear of the bullies and talked nice to them and wished them well in life so that they would not hurt me. But I had, you know, basically a great life here at the church. You know, we had every other year the church directory picture looks like I'm that plaid jacket. I'm a used car salesman there. My brother would stare aimlessly into the wind sometimes. And my parents, you know, we were not rich. We were low income and didn't know it because I never was hungry. We didn't have the fanciest things. In fact, we didn't really have a Christmas tree that looks like the Charlie Brown shrub that he got every year. We saved on plumbing, and my rock and roll career in my pajamas didn't go very far. But we always had a fun Christmas and got to go on a little vacation every so often. I tormented my brother and sister like any other good American kid. You can tell from this photo, the glow of heaven came down on the favorite child of the family, who God was well pleased to meet him. And then we got in the 70s, like all guys, wore extremely short shorts in public. And then I met this good-looking girl, had these two goober heads here. They grew up and played ball for us at Lipscomb. The one on the left married this crazy woman here and gave me those two little grandkids. And I felt like for a long time that God was protecting me. I felt guilty for being so blessed. First time I went to Honduras, I dealt not with depression, but I started questioning God. Like, why do I have? See, now I'm going, God, why did you take it away? Back in the day, when I was Mike the person that used to be, I used to go, God, why do I get everything? I guess he finally said, well, we'll flip it around for you, bud. But I came back from Honduras, and I looked at my closet differently. I looked at Kroger's differently. why do I have this incredible life? And I really felt like what the devil said to God about Job, have you put a hedge around him? In fact, I thought I had been protected in a special way because I always felt I was too soft, and if something real bad happened, I'd fall apart, and God protected me so I could help build other people up and make them feel better. So I just thought, I'm just going to have a really easy time all the way through because I'm a sissy. I'm a spiritual sissy. Well, that ended in 2004, January the 4th. My boys were 9th grade and 12th grade at Lipscomb with me where I was teaching. And I literally would not have traded my life with anybody in the world. And I had typical ups and downs, but just overall, I had 95% of my life. It was incredible. And then I woke up for the first day of teaching for the new semester, and I woke up and I started having rapid fire, just little quick bits of scenes, kind of like that real fast, you know, going real fast, you know, kind of like when the ESPN or CBS Sports, they come on, they're going to show the upcoming game, and they go through these real quick. They're so fast you can't even tell who the kids are, who the players are. I hate when they do that, but it's just real fast, boom. That was happening to me, and it was things that were vile, horrible, blasphemous, sacrilegious, just little one-bite scenes. I'll tell you why later that I don't remember what they were, thank goodness. I found out later there's a particular brand of mental illness that attacks what is sacred to you, almost like it's alive. So this is going on all day while I'm trying to teach. And I mean, it's about to drive me nuts. I don't know what's happening. So I didn't tell Lisa, and I came home, and I still didn't tell her. I thought, well, I'll be okay in the morning. I woke up, and it's still going on, and I got to 9 o'clock in the morning, and I called her. I said, "Honey, I got to come home. Something is wrong with me." And I never went back to school that semester. I didn't really go back to church for a long time. What had happened in my brain, we have a serotonin level, and the best way, there's two ways I can kind of describe it. One way is we have electrical circuits in our brain, and something had short-circuited, and it created that. And so along with these incredible, horrible images, at the same time, I was having other horrible thoughts, and I literally went to, this way I was. And it kept getting worse and worse. Along with, I started having, like a computer, my brain started playing back everything I'd ever done wrong in my life. But like a computer on the screen. And it was things I'd forgotten about from elementary school and junior high. And then, the third phase of it, to top it off nicely, I had an obsession of confession. And so I told Lisa everything I'd ever done, said, and thought. I don't know about y'all. If you tell your best friend or your spouse everything you've ever done, said, and thought, it's probably going to strain that relationship, isn't it? Does anybody want anybody to know everything you've done, said, and thought? And even though I had never gone out on, or I'd never beaten the kids, or I'd never been, we all got stuff that we thought of that we're not proud of, things we've done. And now she knows. I really don't like that verse, be sure your sin will find you out. Didn't quite dream of it happening that way. This caused me to plunge into a state of depression. And this terrible mental illness made me think I was lost. In fact, it made me think I had never been a Christian. It made me think that I was the biggest hypocrite. So I had lived my whole life knowing I was going to heaven, and now I have no doubts I'm going to hell. And I had nothing. And it keeps getting worse and worse, and I plunge deeper and deeper. And just like Job said, I wanted to die, and I said, why did I not die at birth? And it kept going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Why is this happening? because I had a chemical imbalance. It took me to suicidal levels. It's hard for me to say that. I don't think I've ever done it. I probably spent more time telling God to kill me rather than me taking my life. And here's how sick I was. If you think you're going to hell, the last thing you want to do is die. So I thought I was going to hell, but I wanted to die. Now that's sick. Because if you believe you're going to hell, you don't want to die right now. But that's how sick I was. Now, some people have obsessive compulsive disorder. But some of us, before I understood this, I'd just say to the person, well, quit washing your hands. Oh, I bet they hadn't thought of that. On the left is a healthy brain. On the right is OCD. All the firing. It's overdone. That is a scientific data evidence. This is not something that's a lack of faith. Mental illness is not something that you can think your way out of. Let me show you how I came back. And it was a long journey. But not as long as a lot of people. And maybe not as long as what some of you have had or are going through now. I was very fortunate that I had a church and a school that continued to pay me. And I'll forever be indebted to Lipscomb and Woodson Chapel, where I'm currently at, for continuing to pay me during this incredible time. Went to doctors and tried different medications and nothing worked. I asked them, can you do something? I said, is there open brain surgery? Could you do something to my brain? They said, well, it's very dangerous and something could happen to me. I said, I don't care. I can't live this way. I wanted to try anything. And I was fortunate I had doctors that passed me along with other people more and expertise at a higher level. And I appreciate that because I know some people in the medical field have a bad rep for ripping people off. I had some honest people that passed me on to others. Finally got to a doctor, a psychiatrist over in Brentwood, and he said, Mike, I can bring you back. He's an African-American man. He's someone that I trust with my life. And he said, I can bring you back through ECTs. Electroconvulsive therapy that puts you into a seizure. For 45 seconds, your brain goes into seizure. And he said, we don't even know why it works. But he said, it works on 90% of my patients. I can bring you back. And it re-scrambles the neurons up there. So I had that going on. And over the course of a year, I had about 30 of those done. And it did create some short-term memory loss. And that was frustrating, but it was worth the payoff. It did create some short-term memory loss, but it was worth it because of the trade-off. By the way, I've got a song I want you to leave later. So during this time, when I talk about depression, and let me kind of describe a little more detail for you. When I say depression, I was one of the worst cases I've ever seen. I talked to a lot of people in it. I had zero good thoughts, zero smiles. If you in here right now are experiencing depression, but you have some good moments, you're ahead of where I was, take hope. I had nothing. No sunset was pretty. No baby was cute. No woman was good looking. No food tasted good. Krispy Kremes did not. Can you imagine that? I didn't even care about that. But think that's how low I was. Nothing looked good, felt good, tasted good. I cared nothing about sports. I cared nothing. And the thing is, I hated that I didn't because I knew how I used to feel. It's not like I was okay with this new life of not caring. That's what was murdering me, is that I didn't care or love anything anymore, and that was killing me, and I couldn't fight my way out of it. my wife, who she just deserved to stay down here. I should have gone first. I'm still, you know, I don't get that one. Yeah. She saved my life. While having to deal with the issues that I brought up, I tell her everything I've ever done, said, and thought. First thing that helped, and these are things that you need to do or get your loved ones to do, okay, to help bring them back. Diet. Now, I can't talk about this like I'd like to now because I've kind of redone putting on the weight. Since I did not like any food, Lisa fed me a perfect diet. I only ate enough. She had to make me eat. I would not have eaten. And she picks up on that and realizes, well, if he doesn't care what he eats, I'm going to feed him a perfect diet. That helped in making the comeback. Perfect diet. I lost 50 pounds. I need to do 50 pounds again. So she made me walk. Every single day we walked 5 miles, rain, sleet, or shine. And I was in the best shape of my older adult life. I was in perfect shape, still in deep depression. But those two things helped be the catalyst to bring me back. So if you are experiencing this or you're dealing with friends that are, and by the way, after you hear this, if you've experienced it, you're able to tell that I've been there. I'll come up here and talk to your loved ones. You can have me up, or we can have dinner. I like fried chicken, mashed potatoes, green beans, homemade banana pudding, sweet tea. That's up to you, though. But I'll come. I finally got the right balance of meds. And the other thing, the routine. If some of you are going through the motions and faking it till you make it, keep doing that. Keep doing that. Had it not been for Lisa, I would have probably laid in bed and died. But she made me get up. Now, I couldn't go to school and teach, and I couldn't go to church and teach. But, you know, she tried to get me to do things. And it was tough. It was very difficult. Had a good friend of mine, Coach Ronnie, of course, David James, you know David down at Woodson Chapel. David is the most dedicated Vanderbilt fan in the world. I like Vanderbilt second, but so Lisa called him up and said, invite Mike to go to the game. I didn't want to go to the game. I didn't care about the game. I didn't care. My boys were playing. I didn't care about anything. So she made me go with her. David, it's incredible. We listened to the pregame show all the way over the games and watched the game. I just stared out of the court. I didn't care what was going on. But he never counseled. He never tried to do any type of therapy. He actually acted like nothing was going on, and he just talked about the game. And even though I hated going, it again was a tiny step of routine. I don't even know if he was doing something, that he realized he was doing something therapeutic for me. But he was a great help. There were only a few people that I would talk to. Only a few people I let come over to the house. Coach Ronnie, Mike Roller, Coach Roller, was one of those. And he took me out to eat one day. And Coach Roller took a big chance on this. We went by a house that had a Civil War cannon like that. And he said, McPherson, you think he got trouble? They have to protect their house with a cannon. And it was the first time I laughed. That was kind of risky. First time I laughed. It was a tiny step. It was that tiny step. When a person recovers out of depression, they don't do it in a linear way, like if you break a bone and it gets slightly better every day. That's not the recovery. Now, if you're in this or if you ever go into it, this will help you a whole lot right here. Okay? Here's what happens. At least this is what happened to me. Okay, I was doing fine. I was having a wonderful life up here. And then I didn't go down like that. I went like this. And I stayed there a long time. So in the recovery, it's not linear, it's like this. And one thing that a doctor told me, and I'll explain this, that this is a powerful thing that I've shared with many. Today's low is better than yesterday's high. Because in depression, you don't wake up one day usually and go, I'm not depressed anymore. In fact, in my case, I had to look back and go, whoa, I wasn't quite as sad today as I was at one time. What I mean by today's low is better than yesterday's high, here's a particular low day that I'm having, let's say. Well, it's higher than a few months ago on a quote high day I was having. I'm just going to let you look at that for a second. I don't know if that's hitting you. Does that make sense? That's powerful. That's important to know. And that can help a person. So the routine, counseling, the support, you know, I've never felt that I'm better than poor people or homeless people. I've been in programs to help those and still do that. But all of us, we know, we've looked at that and said, and I have, if you would get a job, you wouldn't be out here begging. Some of them are lazy. Some of them have mental illness and have no support system. And that's where I've been. I don't judge them anymore. I don't judge them. Because if I hadn't had Lisa in my church, I probably wouldn't have been homeless. I would have probably shriveled up on the bed and died. But I had her. I had other people. I had an army of prayers going up, an army of prayer warriors, and that's the other thing. But this, it's hard for me to even think about her being gone when she held me up and got me through this and brought me back. The idea of mental illness is it's kind of a misnomer. There are live circuits up there, things that can be touched. Again, let me show you another scan. The depressed brain and the normal brain. Okay, look at this here. We've got, here's a healthy brain, the frontal cortex. Look at the lack of blood flow over here. This is a chemical, physical thing. Okay? It's just like any other illness. And when we call it mental, it gives it the idea it's cloudy, it's ethereal, it's kind of like Casper, you know, put your hand through it. These are tangible, touchable things. Well, I'll call it brain illness instead of mental illness. Now, I asked one psychiatrist, is this a good way to explain to people that don't understand? He said, yeah, it's not exactly clinically correct, but it's a good illustration that I came up with. So think about the liquid in these vials, and if you're right up at the top, then you're okay. I was probably just under the top, and life was fine, but I was about ready to go down. Probably from having a head injury and a wreck. I had gone through a mild depression a few years earlier when I kicked my son off my basketball team. You'll hear more about that on Wednesday. It's a great story. Wednesday's going to be a positive lesson. Nobody will go into depression from my lesson on Wednesday like you are tonight. But I was probably teetering right under it, and then we had two kids in our youth group, got killed within 6 months dealing with that, and then I was okay, but probably just ready to drain out. I don't know if that helps or not, but anyway, I think it's a misnomer to call it mental. Those are electrical circuits. Depression is not the blues. If you've never been in depression, it's hard for you to understand this, and I'm glad you can. And I was one of these people that didn't understand for a long time. These are real things. Kids have learning issues because of kids. I know, you know, those old timers, I know they're not disciplined enough. They need to be spanked more. You know, they take that belt off. But at the same time, there are chemical imbalances that hurt learning, that hurt behavior. It's not the blues. Everybody has the blues. The blues is not depression. Tennessee loses. You know, I've been sad for several years. But not depressed over them losing. Your girlfriend doesn't go out with, or you have somebody, the banquet, the prom, they don't go out with you. Somebody won't go out on a date with you. Somebody makes fun of you, you're a kid, you got the blues. Depression is a dark cloud. It is a blanket that just covers you and oppresses you. It's not the blues. We all have the blues. We would not treat other illnesses like people treat mental illness. Who looks like we don't have the flu? Make happy thoughts. You mean you got the flu? Do you realize when you tell people in depression, well, get over it? I've had people tell me, their friends, family, preachers in the pulpit have said, it's of the devil. If you have spiritual depression, it's of the devil. You don't have enough faith. That is a highly uneducated person. Maybe sincere, but they don't know what they're talking about. Because you will never have seen a happier person than Tim will tell you, and you knew me back when I was my person. I was high every day on life. And it wasn't a show. Every day. Every day I was pumped up. And something happened. And I wanted to kill myself. I experienced it firsthand. We would not go. I get that you have food poisoning all, but you have to at least make an effort. You just need to change your frame of mind. Then you'll feel better after you lost your hand. I don't know if you've done this or seen this. If you have a church marquee, please do not put this out front. This is so offensive to those of us who have experienced this. Your blessings have nothing to do with depression. I was the happiest person in the world. My wife, my family, we were all healthy. I had not lost my job. Nobody had died. Everything was fine. I was the happiest person in the world. And none of that stuff changed out here, but this changed. This changed. If you don't have this, I would rather be paralyzed than in the depression I was having. Because if I was paralyzed, I could still enjoy a sunset at Tennessee football. But if I have all of my physical faculties and I don't have my brain and I don't like anything, I'll take paralysis, I'll take being crippled, I'll take being blind over where I was at. Please don't tell people to have happy thoughts. Just get busy, get a hobby. Y'all, I was busy. I was coaching, teaching, youth minister, father, husband. I was busy. Has nothing to do with it. You can't play the comparison game. You can't say, oh, well, look how blessed we are in America. I mean, good night, we're going to heaven and we live in America. That has nothing to do with it. At Lipscomb, we had one of our tech guys was on a ride lawnmower, and his little three-year-old boy had run up behind him when he didn't know it. He backed up and went over the little boy's foot and cut his foot off. He went into a pretty deep depression. He's having a real tough time. And so he wanted to come up and talk to me one day. And I said to him, I said, you know, in our church, we lost two kids in 6 months in car wrecks. Those two families would love to trade places with you, and you would not trade places with them, but that doesn't take away your depression. And he just nodded with tears because he knew I understood. Yeah, he was more fortunate than the families that lost their kids, but it's chemical. It's chemical. You can't play the comparison game. Now, when you're having the blues, you can. Where's my Tennessee fans? Where are you? Okay. God bless you. Before I move on, I've got to make a point here. We're Tennessee fans because we're from Tennessee. Like, who are we for in the Olympics? America. Why? We're from here. If you're from Tennessee, I rest my case. Anyway. Thank you. When Tennessee loses like they have, I could then say, well, at least I have the eyes to see and the feet to walk to the game. I feel better about myself. Let's go to Dairy Queen. You can do that on the blues, but not on the depression. I guess God let me have this because I'm trying to wipe away the stigma of we think people with mental illness have a lack of faith and are not good, strong Christians. Y'all look at that. That's for teenagers. You got to understand that. It's a real deal. Now, let me apply this theologically and we'll stop. I told y'all I wasn't going to go as long, so I got 4 minutes. I got to fly right here. Okay? Back when I was a young youth minister, we talked to people. They'd be fired up. They'd be fired up from God. Like that little kid is amening and fired up. We've got to be fired up for God. I can't be fired up for God right now. All I can do is faithful. Back when I was saying that, God, I ain't fired up for God. There were people that had lost their spouses. And there were people that were dealing with sickness and paralysis and children sick and dying. God never says to be fired up. He says to be faithful. I have a younger son. I would not say this if we were on the air or if he was here, but he's dealing with some of this now. And he told me, he said, I have a smashed mustard seed of faith. And I said, it's all you need right now. Sometimes that's all I have right there. And we think that our salvation depends on how strong our faith is. No, it's the faith in what we have faith in that saves us. Not the degree of our faith. Your faith is going to wax and wane. It's going to be up and down. If our salvation depends on the degree of our faith, what if you die on one of your down days? Well, I like to die in the middle of that night song. That'd be a good time. Well, what about when you're at the funeral home and you die then? You die at the funeral. You don't go to heaven because your faith is low. You just have to have faith as a mustard seed. Your faith is going to wax and wane. But it's faith. As I told you last night, I'm limping. But if you're limping, you're going forward. Going forward if you're limping. You know, I think it's just so important to realize that you have hope. If when I was like her, if you had come up to me and said, Mike, don't quit. One day you're going to be back to coaching. You're going to have grandkids. Mike, you realize that in 5 years from when that happened, you're going to get to coach Lipscomb in the state tournament. And then 6 years later, you're going to take another team, National Christian. You're going to get to coach and say, you're then going to have these grandkids. I would have said, why are you making fun of me? That's not going to happen. Don't quit no matter what. Don't ever throw in the towel. Never quit. Never give up. There's always hope. There's always hope. That's why we have the church. I can't imagine atheists going through this stuff without anybody. I feel so sorry for them. We have a church. We have support. Be there for those people. We'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow night about how we can help people with these. And tomorrow night, I'm going to talk to you about things to not say at funerals, in hospitals, and to depressed people. I'll try to make it positive. Wednesday will be good. Wednesday's positive. I'm looking forward to Wednesday. And plus, what are we having? Okay. I'm still looking forward to coming to Pleasant View. Really? I'm still looking forward to it. Maybe it's not as much as last night, but we have an invitation. Are we doing an invitation? Okay. Well, let me skip ahead here. I don't have time for all that right there. Okay. Listen to that. When he has tried to master 2 months ago, and we really will, and even if it's not in this line, it will be in the next one. So I'll be here a long time tonight. If you need to talk to me. if you want to set up a time when I can come up to you at your house. But let me know if you need to talk about it, and hopefully I can get some help to you. I know this is not a typical sermon, but this is not a typical series that we're doing. So I appreciate Shell's indulgence there. But if we can help you, if you have not been immersed in Christ, don't come forward if you just feel like, I don't have as much faith as I did yesterday. That's going to go up and down, back and forth. But if you just really need prayers, or maybe you just need to get back into God's grace, we'll take some time here to welcome you. Just stand and sing.